One that I set at the start of this year is minimum every single month I've got to get in person to events. I think I said one a month. I've ended up doing like five or six a month minimum. And I cannot, like, for anybody listening to this episode, I can't give enough passion down the mic to really highlight, emphasize, you know, tattoo on your forehead the importance of getting in the rooms and having real conversations.
Welcome to the podcast From Overlooked to Fully Booked with me, Nikki Hutchison, and my special guest today, Matt Hall. If you haven't met Matt yet, he's a pretty big deal in the online business space right now, but he would never describe himself like that. He's way too humble, but he's highly visible. He's investing in himself and his business on repeat, and it looks like it's paying off big time. So I can't wait to share Matt's journey with you today. If you're a regular listener as well, then you'll know by now that I'm all about multiple revenue streams. And one of the strings to Matt's bow is that he hosts epic events. In fact, his most recent event was in person last Sunday at time of recording in Leeds, where I was speaking. So I can testify to the fact that Matt has grown a highly engaged and even more than that, highly charged and a highly motivated and really great fun to be around audience of lovely people. So today I want to ask Matt some of the questions that he might not have been asked before, because I want to reveal exactly how he has supercharged his growth so far this year. So welcome to the show, Matt.
Thank you so much for having me. And you know, I'm still buzzing from that event. Just hearing you say that about the audience and the vibes and the energy, it really was probably one of my highlights, actually, out of everything that we do. And having you there and having your amazing talk, but also just having you in the room and being a part of the whole networking for the day and the evening, I'm just so grateful to you. So thank you for being a big part of what made it such a special day.
Well, likewise, thank you so much for having me there, because you really have created a very special community and event. So we've met a few times in person now, and you're more often than not found on socials. Can you give us your snappy elevator pitch for anyone who maybe doesn't know you yet?
Snappy elevator pitch. Hello, everybody. My name is Matt Hall. We'll do it like radio presenter style. So I'm an online business strategist specializing in particular with people who are wanting to launch courses and memberships, create recurring revenue, and not be constantly trading time for money. Basically, that's what I help people with.
Brilliant. So we're going to get into like some of your key milestones, what's got you to where you are today. But you mentioned recurring revenue, and this is a massive focus for me just now. So what do you mean, just in case people aren't sure of that term, what do you mean and how are you creating it?
So for me, it's about having a kind of level of predictability in your business where you've got a certain amount of money that you can kind of guarantee is coming in each month. So that's where a good model for that is things like memberships. So we've just relaunched our membership. We've now got nearly 250 people in there, which generates us just short of £6,000 per month, every month. And I think for a lot of us, when we're more like starting out in business, a lot of us that are like online service providers, maybe coaches and things like that, it can feel like there isn't that predictability. One month, you might have loads of one-to-one clients. They come to the end of their package with you, and then suddenly you're going, oh, I need to get some new clients to kind of replace that income. And I think things like memberships can really help you have, and you know, there is still churn. You're not going to just have, just because people join, they don't stay forever, but it does give you that little bit more, as I say, like level of predictability. So when I'm teaching people and helping people with business, I think we've kind of got two key things to focus on. One is those higher ticket, those kind of cash spikes that big launches and things can bring in. And then the other is that kind of more predictable, stable, recurring revenue. They're kind of the two things I try and help people factor into their strategy.
100%. And it's actually, I need to look into this. I don't know whether you know, what's the average number of members in an online membership? I don't know that, do you?
No idea.
But I'm guessing it's not that common to have 250 members.
Yeah, I guess not, no. And actually, like, again, I know you want to ask me the difficult questions and the questions that brings out the real truth. Because I think that's what people need. You know, I had a membership for about 4 years that I really struggled to make money from. We was always hovering around 60 to 70 members. It was less than £20 a month. And it was one of those things, because I still wanted it to be high value, I was giving so much to it for, you know, less than a grand a month a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't sustainable. But something within me just kept going with it. And then the last couple of years have really doubled down on learning about launching things more effectively and all the kind of tricks behind what makes a great launch. And then we've done that this year. And that's just when it's gone vroom. And suddenly there's those bigger numbers now.
Amazing. And just for transparency, I had a membership before and I launched it and I got about 50 members in and I hated it. I absolutely hated it.
What was it you hated?
I like looked at what everyone else was doing and right. tried to do the same. So I had a monthly theme and I had this and a that. And I had a level that was only £10 a month. It was when lots of people were talking about low ticket memberships. So I was making like way less than a grand a month for this membership where I just felt like I was giving my all. So I shut it down really quickly. I can't remember how long ago that was, a couple of years anyway. I shut it down really quickly and people were saying, oh, you can't shut it down. Like people around me going, oh, won't people think that you're flaky and all the rest of it? But I believe in being really agile and making quick decisions. And it was definitely the right one. And now that we've got a membership that I'm about to launch next month, it's completely different because people need different things.
Yeah. And I also think it's important to sort of recognize that a membership won't work for everyone and also will work at different stages in your business. So as a generalized guidance, I will often say to people, I wouldn't advise you start with a membership.
Same.
Unless you've got a huge engaged audience. Now, there's kind of like one exception to the rule. My friend Ross, he has only really built a membership, which is, I think, currently £29 a month. It started out a lot less. And he hasn't done lots of high ticket stuff and all the other kind of offers. He just grew this membership. And now he's got over 1,000 members in there, which is amazing. Wow. So he's a bit of an exception to the rule in that he just had this belief in this membership and what it could be and just kept plugging away. But I think it's important to highlight that is the exception. And also it's important to highlight that, you know, and he's openly spoke about this, on year 4, his accountant said, stop it, like close the membership down. It doesn't work. And he just persevered. But I think that's really important to be honest about that. For most people, I would say start more mid-ticket offers, high-ticket offers, that kind of stuff. Once you've established yourself and then you're getting the visibility, growing the audience, a membership can be a brilliant thing to introduce.
And just quickly, you said year 4, his accountant told him to shut it down. What year is he in now with his 1,000 members?
I think he must be coming up to, well on his way to maybe 12 years, something like that.
Wow, that is perseverance, isn't it?
Correct, yeah, absolutely.
Good on him. All right, so we dive straight in there, but let's have a quick overview, please, Matt, of what's got you to where you are today. I know you've got a really interesting career background, so share with us quickly some of the key milestones and maybe facts that we need to know about you.
We'll do the whistle stop tour because it is. I've lived many lives, it feels like, at this stage, but in a nutshell, started out as a sort of child actor, performer, did some TV work when I was like 16, 17, joined a Take That tribute band at 17. As we do. And then at 19, saw an opportunity to start a business around that and start managing us as the band. And then I grew that to have over 500 acts now that we either represent or manage in-house. We've got a full team of people there now that runs that business. That business is 15 years old this year, still going strong.
Congratulations.
We've expanded it beyond tributes. We have function bands, singers, DJs, lighting, sound, all that kind of stuff, lookalike. What I would consider now a really lucky, privileged kind of position where that business generates me income every single month. And I really don't work for the business. I've kind of built this beautiful, incredible team that, if I'm completely honest, runs much better when I just stay out of it. Like the systems are in place, the processes, the people, everybody knows their place and they know what's happening. We have a Zoom meeting every week. I'm still there on WhatsApp. They all now work remote. We do still have our offices and our dance studio and we still have the physical premises, but actually all my team now work from home because since the pandemic, they found that works better for them and their lifestyles and our productivity. I was led by the data. And the business has continued to grow. We've not seen that it's been problematic with our team working from home. Now, I do think that would be different if you was, say, you had 12 or more people in your business. And obviously different industries, different types of businesses, remote working doesn't work the same. But for our business, it just works. And it is now just something I feel very lucky to have But that has come from years of hiring the wrong people, making the wrong choices, losing money, all kinds of learning and lessons along the way. Again, it's the same theme as what we were just referring to. It's not like an overnight thing of a couple of years graft and it became amazing. I probably had 8 years of pretty much hating what I was doing. I was constantly exhausted. I was constantly working and I was struggling to make money. That's the truth of it. So there was 8 years of it being really, really tough. And it's only really this sort of second chapter, if you like, where that business now does all right. It manages to run, makes a profit, pays me a wage, and it's kind of in a decent little place.
So what was the tipping point?
So, well, I think through hiring people, you eventually find a few gems. I think that's a big thing. I think through sheer perseverance, I've never been a person really that had a plan B. So there's that just willingness to not quit with it. You just learn bit by bit. And I think there's a compound effect that kind of comes into play. But then I went through a really tough time when I was about 27 years old in that basically everything I thought success was, I started questioning because I had that naive 19-year-old that started that business kind of mindset at that point was, by the time I'm 30, I'll have a multi-million pound business, I'll be married, we'll have three children or whatever. And actually, I was like 27, nearly 28, and the business was just draining me. We were struggling to sort of break even. And then the relationship I'd been in, we split up after nearly 7 years, and it was a really tough breakup. And so suddenly I'm like, I'm nearly 30, I'm definitely not a bloody millionaire. I'm definitely not married with kids. I mean, I'm single and going on dating apps like I'm a 17-year-old. I'm like, this feels weird. And the truth is, Nikki, I had like about probably close to a year where I really, really struggled mentally. So when everyone else was going to university and partying, I was building a business in a committed relationship. And basically, my mindset went to, what was it all for? Like, have I wasted my youth? Have I not done what I should have done, which is have a bit more fun? Because building a business and being in a committed relationship has not worked out, is how I was feeling at the time. So I had about a year of just partying, drinking, constantly just feeling, I guess, numb, no ambition. It's so weird. I don't think about it a lot, but it was so different to who I am today. And eventually, it just got to that point of, come on, Matt, you're better than this. You know, we've got to turn this around. And that was what really started me on the self-development stuff and really starting to learn properly about business and podcasts and YouTube. And that around 27, 28 is where things then took that turn.
Do you think, because when I was 17, 18, 19, I was having a pretty wild time, right? I was
like, I can imagine.
Can
you? That was everything, Nikki.
But I always knew I had people who believed in me. So like my family just always expected more of me, like expected me to do good things. Did you have that kind of support as well?
Yeah. So my parents, you know, they're still together today. You know, we didn't have loads. Like my dad comes from a council estate and really broke the mold there in getting a proper job in the fire service when a lot of, you know, his friends and that, you know, I guess didn't turn out that way. And I think him and my mum's a mobile hairdresser, you know, they had very, what would be considered, I guess, just normal jobs and normal aspirations. But they really, really wanted to give me everything. I think like being good parents to them was so important. And as a result, I constantly felt loved and supported in whatever I wanted to do. And also the other side of it is I felt this huge responsibility to not let them down. And I still feel that today. It's actually still something that drives the hell out of me. Because I'm like, I know whatever they had, they would give to me when I was a kid, just to give me the best possible, you know, start. And now I just feel like so much like gratitude, but also this urgency to be able to show them what I can do with it and to pay them back, I guess.
Yeah, totally. My background's quite different. My parents got divorced when I was very young. I've got five, they're technically half brothers. I never refer to them as that. Five brothers, all younger. We all do different things. I know that all of our parents collectively, doesn't matter to them what we do. Like it does not matter as long as we are good people and we're happy. That is it. But I still feel that weight of responsibility to prove myself.
Yeah. And it's the same. Like my parents, they just want me to be happy. That's it.
Yeah.
They just want me to be healthy and happy. And I know that intellectually. But emotionally, there's something that's like, I saw how hard they both worked and what they did to be able to, like, for example, help me go to acting classes when I was a kid and all that stuff. I know that. And it just guides me massively to want to pay them back.
It's just interesting, I think, to hear about people's different experiences and see if there's any commonalities, because I do feel like somebody believing in you. And actually, there's research to prove this, which is why I started my first business, which, just like you, I see as a training ground, a lot of slog, but it's got me to where I am today. Before I started that, I was working in agencies and was working on a 2-year research program for the Scottish Government into how to reduce antisocial behaviour amongst children and young people. And the two things that they need, according to this research that we did, is an activity that they love and a really strong role model. So it doesn't need to be your parents necessarily, but you've got to have somebody believing in you so that you can go out there and take over the world.
I think that's huge. And I think in particular, those very early formative years, that is massive, because it is where we're really creating our worldview and how we feel about judgment and all those kind of things. And I think if you have got that person who believes in you and also can sort of show you that it's possible, whatever that thing is, I think that plays out in people's entire lives then, those early years and their self-belief, self-worth, and what they believe they can ultimately go on to achieve.
Absolutely. And actually, if you think about it, we're both investing in the same person. We're both working with Lisa Johnson to help give us that belief and that guidance and that support right now. So I don't really think there's an end to it.
Yeah. And also, it sort of brings to my mind when we're talking about this, the element of risk and investing. And I think I've reflected on this just really recently. I think I was speaking about it on a podcast and it made me think about it. And actually, from me going to acting classes and performing arts and so on, number one, I was constantly getting rejected, but it was normal, i.e. like it was normal to fail. So I think a lot of people are petrified of failing. Whereas for me, I wasn't, because I was like, it's just a numbers game. So from being 8 years old, I was like, some auditions you'll get, some you won't. And I think that was really important. And also, I was around people who were getting the roles. So for example, the stage school I went to was somewhere in Bradford. At the time, it was Jack Shepherd was still a student there, who is David Platt on Coronation Street. And he was on Corrie at the time. Kimberly Walsh from Girls Aloud had just got into Girls Aloud. So I was around a lot of these people that showed me those people on telly are just real people. And so when it comes to my relationship with risk and self-belief, I think those, again, coming back to the thing of early years, it's that environment, who I was around and what I could see. I think because of those experiences, I've always been like, it's possible and we'll find a way and these things do happen. And actually, that's why I don't fear risks and investments and things like that.
And do you think there's a way, if you haven't had that, like, I don't know whether I had a similar experience. Probably if I thought about it, I could think about successful people that I was around at a young age. But for anyone who maybe hasn't had that experience, or for anyone who, like some members of my family, for example, could never be entrepreneurs because they're petrified of everything. What would you say to somebody who's thinking, I don't know if I can believe in myself that much. I don't know if I can put everything on the line day after day, because that's really what we have to do every single day, isn't it?
Well, you don't have to. I think there's a few things in how to answer that. Like, number one is maybe entrepreneurship isn't for everybody, and that's totally fine. That's okay. Number two, the one thing I love about entrepreneurship, again, from my background of like performing arts, but if you look at actors, singers, dancers, if you look at sports people, I feel like there's this huge gap between success and everybody else. In other words, it's like 0.0001% of people in the acting industry that will make really good money only from acting, you know, your big Hollywood stars. And then like next down from them is millions of people that are really happy if they get one acting job a year and make money from teaching acting. And there's this massive gap, like from a Hollywood star to that next step down kind of thing. And it's the same with singers. You know, you've got a very small percent of people that are huge pop stars, and everybody else is struggling to just make a standard living predominantly from singing. And they usually have to top it up by doing other things. I think entrepreneurship's different. You've got your billionaires, you've got your multimillionaires, millionaires, high six-figure earners, or people that just make an extra 30K a year from a bit of a side hustle and things like that. So I think it's about recognizing what sort of a quote-unquote entrepreneur do you want to be. You don't all have to be multimillionaires, but you can still build a business online, you know, with social media, with now artificial intelligence, you know, ordinary, as I call them, quote-unquote ordinary people. If they do want to learn the skill sets, can still make extra income from online without having to give it absolutely everything. It's only for the people like you and I that are a little bit bonkers and we are massively driven, you know, and have these huge goals that, yes, you do have to put it in daily and it is quite relentless. And I do use the word obsessed. I think you have to be obsessed. But that's not for everybody, and that's okay. So I think self-awareness is key. Who truly are you? Why do you want to do this? And what's the level that feels right for you? And then as long as your actions are in alignment with that, you know, that's the right way to look at it, I think.
Okay, so let's talk about money, because we've talked about investing in ourselves. And to the outside person maybe looking in, it's clear that you are investing in yourself and your business reasonably heavily and on repeat this year. So before you were getting a return on that investment, how did you finance that, Matt?
So I think it's about stepping stones. I didn't start like this. When I first started that first business 15 years ago, I just had, number one, the privilege of I was 19 living at my parents' house. So that obviously helped. Number two, I just saved up a few grand that I just invested in buying some speakers and costumes. And then it was just a case of let's get this business on the road. And every time we made money, I reinvested it. That was always my attitude. We never had any loans ever. And I don't think loans are a bad thing. I think they can be a great tool. But back then, I didn't know of podcasts. I didn't know of YouTube, of mentors. I didn't have anyone around me to guide me. And my dad, I think, is very risk averse and worries about investing. Basically, he was my only mentor. And he just said, like, don't get yourself into debt. That was the advice I had. So it was literally just starting with a couple of grand and slogging your guts to get work. Any money I got, it was just reinvest, reinvest, reinvest. So it's step by step, and it definitely didn't start like this. Again, I think people's individual circumstances is key. I am at the current time of doing this, single, no children, things like that. So I can, just for full transparency, I can be quite selfish, I guess, in that I don't need to make loads of money for my own lifestyle or family or anything like that right now. I can just go, okay, as long as I've got my bare minimum, I'm going to reinvest. So I think that's it, really. It doesn't matter how much money you start with. It's more the mentality and the attitude, or for me, it has been, which is it's not about me living a champagne lifestyle and, you know, looking like I've got money. It's about me going, can I put something out there with the little money I've got, provide a good service to then make a profit and then reinvest that profit? That has been literally my attitude from 15 years ago, and it still is today.
Yeah, makes total sense. And so let's get into the nitty gritty then. What have you invested in this year? If you're happy to share how much you've spent on certain things, and how do you know it's working?
Well, I need to have a meeting with my bookkeeper, which is my dad, where he'll probably shout at me a lot and be like, Matthew, how have you spent this again? Which is usually how those conversations goes, because I am very much the creative, entrepreneurial, head in the clouds, and he is the numbers and figures. And
that's a good combo though.
Absolutely, right? That's what you need. So in terms of the total number, I don't know exactly, but I would say it's well on its way to maybe 70,000, something like that this year, I would guess. And predominantly, it's just been investing in visibility opportunities, mentoring opportunities. So I've been really big on pay-to-play opportunities, sponsorship opportunities, getting to events, speaking at events, PR. We've invested in PR this year quite a bit. Building my team, having help with social media content creation, things like that. Facebook ads and having somebody to run Facebook ads. We've invested in that. Now I'm saying it out loud, it's probably even more than that number, to be honest. But one thing I will say is, firstly, it didn't start out like that. It's been a process. Secondly, it's about being clear and intentional about what season are you in right now. So this year is not about me personally making loads of money. It's not about me personally investing heavily into my future. This year is about the business being the number one priority. And it's what can we do to kind of time collapse results, really, get super visible in a short space of time, and then leverage that result long term. So that's the season I'm in. So the decisions I'm making now would be different to what I'll make in a year and are different to what I made a year ago. And I think that context is really important for people to understand.
I love what you said there about time collapsing results. And also you mentioned being obsessed and being impatient. I feel like these are, I was going to say non-negotiables, but if you're as driven as we are, then those are the things that you're focused on, aren't they?
Sure. One thing I would say is it's not about impatience. I am very much focused on the long game and having patience. But within that process, I'm trying to maximize what I can out of every day and squeeze it for everything it can be. But it's kind of like, it's that juxtaposition of you've still got to deploy patience and not just be doing things short-sighted. You know, it's like, okay, we want massive visibility this year. So visibility is the main key, but it's part of a much longer plan. It's not just what some people do, which is how do I just make loads of money this month right now? So there is a long plan. There's a long-term strategy and there's patience within that. And then in terms of how I execute, it's like, how do we get the most out of every day, every week? And I do use that word obsessed because I think for the levels at which we want to reach and have reached and other people have reached, it can't be a side hustle or a bit of a kind of want to do this. It has to be, just because you won't get those results. You won't.
Yeah, you've got to be all in. And when you're deciding what, or maybe even more, I'm more curious about who. When you're deciding who to invest in when it comes to business support, what are some of the key things that you're looking for?
The first one is that there's clear evidence they get results, that they genuinely do what they say, and it's not just inflated, hyped claims that a lot of people make online. I think that's the first one. The second one is that they've done it themselves. That's important to me because there's a difference between an educator and a coach and actually a mentor who's lived and breathed it. Because I feel like an educator, it's more logic and strategy. A mentor, it's more experience and there's emotion. So if you can get the two, I think that's the sweet spot. So that's the second thing I look for. And the third one, the best way I can put it is that they're not a dick, really. And what I mean by that is their values and their personality. Is this someone actually that I like as a human being? I've had this experience previously with a mentor that, yes, they got results and what have you, but actually they were not a nice person. And I've had multiple experiences of this over my life. When I think of my first manager, when we joined the tribute band, horrible guy, great to learn from, because I was like, everything you are is the opposite to what I want to be when I manage us. So that's the third thing for me now. I just want to work with people where there's that aligned values and they're actually good human beings first and foremost. One thing that I've always said with our business from day one was people first, profit second. Like for me, it's about genuine relationships and not just how do we make our commission out of this and how do we get the upper hand? Because I've seen that and I hate it. So that's the third thing I'm looking for.
And I think I know the previous mentor that you're talking about. I think you spoke about it on a different podcast. And actually, there was a whole scenario that blew up around this person at the time, wasn't there? Yeah. So looking back at your decision to invest in that person, two things. One, would you do it again? Because even though they weren't aligned, maybe they got you results or learnings or insights. And two, how would you avoid? Like, what did you not do?
Before you
check that person out.
Okay, I love those questions. They're great. So the first one, I would absolutely do it again. The person I am today is molded because of that experience. Without that experience, I wouldn't be as aware, as knowledgeable, as experienced as I am today. So absolutely, I'd do it again. In terms of avoiding it, because obviously it's not something that I would say, you know, I recommend people do. It kind of comes back to those three points, like do your due diligence. Do they really get results? Speak to people who've actually worked with them. And I would say a big one is don't just speak to their current clients, speak to ex-clients. Like a lot of people that have worked with me, we've still got great relationships. And I know, and even if we don't stay in touch, I know they'd still say great things about the experience working with me. And I think that says more because sometimes when people are working with you, they're a bit caught up in it or it's a bit new, you know, so I think that's a really key way to sort of get really good, honest feedback as well. So it's that due diligence piece. It's, you know, looking into what they say. Don't just take it all at face value. Because that mentor in particular looked the part. He was there with his 8-bedroom manor house, really charismatic, high energy, talking about the money he's making, all this kind of stuff. And at that point, you know, you said there, I think something along, was it what you needed or whatever? And, you know, I guess the question is, why would you go with somebody like that? And that was just off the back of that time in my life when I'd been about, you know, would have been about 28 and I was lost really. And at that point, that bit more alpha male, kick up the ass, get up at 5 a.m, let's change your life and sort your shit out. I responded well to that. That is something that I kind of feel was good for me.
I think that is the difference between an entrepreneur who's going to be successful and an entrepreneur who's maybe not going to reach the level of success that they want is the ability to take something from every single experience. So, for example, I've worked with mentors in the past who have disappeared. You know, I was part of a group program and the person leading the program had some stuff going on in their personal life, disappeared. We were all still paying them thousands every month. And then they came back 3 months later and said, I'm back. I've had the summer off, but I've got one of my best friends in the world I met in that group, and I met clients in that group, and I learned how I did not want to behave ever when hosting a group program. So I believe that even when it goes wrong, and I wish I could kind of tell people this sometimes, because you know, people are always so nervous to invest, but even if it doesn't go how you expect, you're still going to benefit.
There's been so much I've invested in where I've not got what I thought, and there's just been such great lessons from it. And I think when you have that self-belief in you, you can have that bit more faith that whatever happens, I will learn, I will grow, and I'll move forward. As a result of that experience, I had a lot of trolling on Tattle for 2 years. People that were saying I was a scammer and stuff like that, because they saw him as a scammer, and then so basically guilty through association.
Yeah.
And people get so attached and obsessed with trying to bring that person down or trying to take somebody to court. And I just think the time, the energy, the effort into that. When I left him, he owed me, I think it was either £6,500 or £7,500 in services he'd not delivered. I just let that go and move on. Because whatever, but that's because I've got a belief that I will still come out on top. I don't need to put my energy into negativity and chasing bullshit, you know, and being around negative people and arguing and cause. I'm like, let me just put that same energy and time into, okay, lessons learned, let's keep moving. And that's a key difference.
Totally. And I think it's the same if you lose clients, because inevitably clients are going to leave. It might be for a really positive reason. Like, we work with clients on the agency side and they leave because we get them to a point where they're able to take in a marketing person in-house.
Right.
And so off they go. Brilliant. Job done. And I think when you lose clients, regardless of the circumstances, that self-belief to know this is not the end, I'm going to replace that revenue and more, is absolutely crucial, isn't it?
And it's that scarcity mindset is the problem, isn't it? It's where people feel, oh my God, there's only so many clients and that was a big part of my revenue and I don't know if I can do that again. So that's where I think it's really key, the whole self-development piece, the whole working on your mindset. I think that's something everybody has to do in business, but should continually do and not stop doing long term. I think I say this quite often, most strategy is pretty simple. It's people that make it complex. And by that, what I mean is it's their mindset, it's their emotions, it's their fear of judgment, it's that impatience, whatever it may be. Those are the things that make people not stick to the plan. So I think at the heart of it, we should never overlook the importance of consistent working on that mindset, that growth mindset, that abundance mindset, that self-belief, that self-confidence versus that fear and that, oh, I've lost a client and I need to sue that person in all that negativity.
I think that it is a choice. I choose to believe that I will replace any lost revenue and more. I choose not to stress out about it, try and fight against it, try and change the things that I'm not in control of. I choose to back myself because I am in complete control of myself and how much money I make. But it's taken me a while to get to that point.
Yeah, I think that's important that we're honest about, is it's not like we're just born with these perfect mindsets, like far from it. And actually, you know, one of the reasons I got into self-development and mindset is because I was like, why am I such a negative person? And why do I struggle so much with whatever? Like, I used to be quite a stressy person for a lot of like my teens and early 20s. When I was building that first business, you know, I was constantly on edge and frustrated with stuff. And that's worlds away from who I am today, because it's been a process of working on this stuff. And I think that's important for anyone listening, is if that mindset stuff for you feels like, oh, but I'm not like that, whatever, just go for it. And think of it like working on your body in the gym. Like, you've got to consistently be, over time, eating the right foods, putting in the reps in the gym if you want to see growth. And then if you stop doing the right reps and you stop eating the right food, you'll lose that muscle or whatever. And it's the same with working on your mindset. It's an ongoing journey for the rest of your life, full stop, that you'll always need to invest in.
Okay, so let's talk about your customers. You've got this incredible community that I so enjoyed being part of on Sunday at your event. What are some of the key things that you do to make sure you're delivering excellent customer service to generate this incredible loyalty from your members and your community?
One word, care. It sounds so simplistic, but don't pretend to care. Don't try and look like somebody that cares. Again, it's a mindset piece. Ask yourself, do I actually care about this person getting results? Because if at the heart of you, you actually care and you don't just care about yourself and you need to make more money and you need to get this and I need to look like this, if you actually do care about that individual, you will work really hard to find ways to make sure your customer service is the best it can be, right? If you just care about closing more clients and leads and revenue and things like that, that's where customer service can fall down with certain people. So I think it sounds really basic, really simple. But actually ask yourself, do I actually care about them or do I care more about me and how I look to others than I care about them? And if that's the answer, then you need to work on that and you need to reverse that. So I think because I care, I'm constantly, again, I'll use that word, obsessed with thinking, how can I improve things? Where are my blind spots? Where are my weaknesses? Who do I need to speak to fill those blind spots? I also regularly ask for feedback and I regularly speak to potential ideal clients and things like that about what would you need? What would you want like for this to be a good investment? So again, rather than just presuming and saying this is how I do stuff, I'm always open to change and to adapt from a place of because I care. And I really think that is the key to all customer service and ultimately getting results for people.
Yeah, totally agree. Going that extra mile. And let's talk about, though, when you're as busy as we both seem to be at the moment, you're getting out and about, you're building your business, can feel at times like you're just flying by the seat of your pants. So how do you keep track of everything you're doing? Because I get the impression, Matt, that your brain works a bit like mine. Million miles an hour, got to do this thing, that thing. You thrive on variety. How do you keep track of everything?
Well, there's two points to this. I think the first one that comes to mind is compassion for yourself. So again, I've done a lot of work on myself and I'm now at peace with that is how my mind works and that's how I thrive. What I used to do is beat myself up and think, oh, I've forgotten to do that or I should have wrote that down. And instead, I've got more compassion for how I work and then filled in the blanks with where are my weaknesses? Okay, who can I delegate to? Who can I hire? Who can I bring in so that then it's the full package? And I think that is a key in terms of your energy and how you show up. If you are going to be here, there and everywhere and doing a million and one things, I think they're the two things is understanding how your own brain works and leaning into that rather than beating yourself up for being you and then getting people that accompany that and support that. So yeah, even like just on the way driving to get back here for this, while I was driving, I was on the phone to Helen who works with me. And I was saying, I can't write stuff down because I'm driving. Could you just make a note of this for me? It's finding ways that work for you with the way that your brain works. And I know I'm forgetful and I miss stuff. So then I know I need help with stuff like that. And then with that, I need to make sure I communicate that I need that help. And that's something that, again, didn't come natural, but I'm working on and have worked on. And that's really helped. But the honest truth is like, I come back to the phrase progress, not perfection. I understand the workload we're taking on for the small team that we are, you know, it's not going to be perfect, but as long as the intention is to be as good as you can, and then with that, learn fast. And if you get stuff wrong, hold your hands up and correct it. It stops you being fearful for going, oh, I can't take that on. That's too much or, you know, whatever. So I think that's something that holds a lot of people back is this need for perfectionism. And what that means they do is they play small and they're often end up underachieving on what they could and, you know, fulfilling that potential.
Yeah. Okay. So another way that people play small is that they don't market themselves enough for people to actually notice. And I talk about having your marketing non-negotiables in place. So what would you say yours are, Matt?
So one that I set at the start of this year is minimum every single month I've got to get in person to events. I think I said one a month. I've ended up doing like five or six a month minimum. And I cannot, like, for anybody listening to this episode, I can't give enough passion down the mic to really highlight, emphasize, you know, tattoo on your forehead the importance of getting in the rooms and having real conversations. I know from our event, and I don't know if this was you, but I know lots of people said, I've already got a collaboration set up with this person. I'm following up with that person. There's been a lot of, in fact, I know it's you. Somebody's told me they've booked a call with you. So definitely, right? Those interactions are very different to just jumping into somebody's DMs and messaging them. So a big part of our marketing this year has been let's get in the room. And I actually spoke to Grace Andrews, who was the marketing director of Stephen Bartlett's Diary of a CEO for nearly 5 years, who was obviously at that event and speaking there. And when we was in that green room area, she sort of said, like, what's the thing for you this next year? And I said, more in-person stuff. I said, for me, as AI continues to be more of a thing and rapidly increase, I said, I see there's more value on the in-person stuff than ever before. And her response was, couldn't agree more. She went, 100%, I feel the same. So I think that is one piece of advice I would really get people to take on board is, it almost like going to more old school marketing. I know you've done like the old school with like the flyers and all that kind of stuff. Things come round in sort of seasons, right? And I think to some degree, there's going to be some more value in that sort of stuff. So that is something we're really doubling down on as a non-negotiable is getting to events, sponsoring events, speaking at events. Treats has been huge for this year, getting to retreats. I'm going to one tonight. We just got back from Malta and I went to Ibiza and spoke at a retreat.
You're not
there.
Doing 5 or 6 in person a month. You're doing 5 or 6 in person a week.
It's gone bonkers. It really, really has. But there's, you know, they say, and it's a bit wanky to say, but success leaves clues. But it's like a lot of people said, Matt, like we've really seen your success this year and your growth this year. And the clues are in that. It is the in-person stuff. So I think that's the biggest one I'd give.
You're playing right into my hands because I'm going to talk to you about my event at the end of this podcast.
Can't wait for it. Can't wait. I'm already there, as long as the dates are right.
Amazing. Okay, so one final marketing question before we wrap up. In fact, you've answered this already. All right, I was going to ask you if you had to prioritize one thing marketing-wise for the next 3 months, what would it be? We all know it would be in person. And what would you back that up with? What would be your number two?
Well, one thing I would say is it's about, this is a bit of a controversial one. I don't know your stance on this, but it's pay to play. So what I mean by that is I think there's a lot of mentors and people speaking about organic and social media and that kind of stuff. I've just observed the people who are achieving at the higher levels, when you actually speak to them, it might not be what they say on social media, but behind closed doors, when you have a one-to-one conversation, a lot of them are like, oh yeah, I paid for that person to send an email on behalf. Or that event I spoke at, I paid to get on that stage and things like that. So I just think it's really honest to kind of expose that. Well, rather than thinking, oh, they just all magically overnight grew their audience organically. No. And then the reason it's controversial is people are like, well, you shouldn't have to pay to speak on a stage or pay for that. It's marketing. It's just part of your budget. If you're not at the level of Daniel Priestley, yeah, they might pay Daniel Priestley to come, but that's because of his level and what he's built at that stage in his career. If you're not at that level, you need to find ways to get closer to it. And so if budget is there, and I think pay-to-play means things like sponsorship, speaking at events, getting on podcasts, paying for people to come on your podcast, all those kinds of things, I think it's a perfectly reasonable and smart part of the strategy if you're in a position to do it.
I completely agree. And I think it goes back to what you said near the start where you were talking about shortening the timelines. That is going to shorten the timelines of success, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. And if you know somebody's got an email list with 30,000 people of your ideal client, one thing I want to be careful of what I say here is it's got to be the right fit. You know, you've got to make sure that what you're offering is aligned with their audience. And that's really important. It's not just like throw your money at everybody and all the rest of it. But that's a really good way to get you that exposure. If that's going to cost you a few £1,000 to send that email, it's something to consider. And I don't think it's like, oh, well, you should do everything organic. I just don't think that's true. From the beginning of time, whenever the first business ever existed, people understood you have to invest in marketing. And whether that was back in the day, TV adverts or billboards or being in the yellow pages or whatever, like we've always paid to get in front of our audience. It sounds a bit harsh when I say it, but I feel like we've got a lot of entitled entrepreneurs these days. It's so easy to start with nothing in the online space. People don't understand what it used to be like 10 years ago, 15 years ago. If you were starting a business, you needed to invest tens of thousands of pounds just to begin. And if you can have that same attitude today when most people are thinking they just have to do it all for free, whether that be getting good business loans and things like that, if you can, I think it'll give you the edge.
Yeah, I completely agree. Matt, it's been so great to have you as a guest on From Overlooked to Fully Booked. I know you're still recovering from your event and your calendar is even more jam-packed than mine. So thanks for making time for this today. Before we finish up though, what have you got coming up that you think our listeners need to know about?
Oh, I mean, just go check out my podcast, I would say. It's probably a good one. If people enjoy this kind of chat, my main podcast is Success School. go have a listen to that. If you type in Success School Matt Hall, either on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, it's all those kind of things. That's my interview show, and we'll definitely be getting you on there at some point. I'm not taking no for an answer. I also have my solo show, I guess, which is Online Business Mastery, and that's kind of a bit more short form, little 20-minute bite-sized episodes, just giving you little nuggets each week on different topics. So I would say, yeah, we've got no big launches coming up at the moment. There's nothing like really to sell people as such. But if you just want to come into my world, please do. If you don't already, give me a follow on Instagram's probably my main platform, at Matt Hall Official. Come and connect with me. And do feel free to drop me a DM and just say, I listened to you on Nikki's show and, you know, I thought you was a bit of an idiot or whatever. I'll always take on board the feedback. So it'd be good to connect.
Brilliant. And I love the way you mentioned that so you can track who's coming from this show. Smart.
There you go. Always.
All right. So thanks for joining me on today's episode of From Overlooked to Fully Booked. I'll be back again next Friday at 7 a.m. with more actionable marketing tips and advice. As you heard me discussing with Matt during this episode, getting yourself out from your desk and into rooms full of actual people and real opportunity is an essential part of increasing your visibility and raising your profile that will lead to business growth. In fact, in my experience, it's the fastest way to do it. And I wouldn't be a good marketer if I didn't mention my upcoming event, Launch Like a Pro Live, which is happening in London on the 10th of November. Not only will you hear from Lisa Johnson, who we mentioned and who Matt and I are both working with at the moment, you'll also get everything you need to absolutely smash your next launch right there in the room. So we'll discuss your offer, the what, we'll create your timeline, the when, we'll finesse your strategy, the how, and we'll assemble your launch team, the who. Launching needs to be part of your marketing strategy and it's changing all the time. So get yourself into the room with us on the 10th of November and let's explode your next launch. Until next time, take care and keep marketing.